Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. Last week, we met two women from the Children's Advocacy Center of Southwest Florida's Child Protection Team. That is the agency that gets involved when investigators find evidence of abuse or strongly suspect it. We also met a couple who own a local restaurant that works to raise awareness about the need for foster parents. Today, we're revisiting the issue to talk about being a foster parent, what it takes to become one, and what it's like to be one. And we're also going to learn about what's called the manicure movement that seeks to raise awareness about the problem of child abuse, which is one of the primary reasons kids wind up in foster care. I'm joined in studio by Nedere Salim. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Children's Network of Southwest Florida. Nedere, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to see you again. And I'm also joined by Jesus Martinez. He's a foster parent. Jesus, welcome to the show and thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to add your voice to our discussion, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Nedere, for starters, tell me a little bit about the Children's Network of Southwest Florida and how it's involved with foster care.
So Children's Network is the community-based care lead agency. We're a not-for-profit responsible for taking care of all the kids that have come through the Department of Children and Families abuse and neglect investigations. And we serve five counties, and we have about 3,000 kids per day that we're serving through various programs.
Mm-hmm. So we talked on April 1st about how kids might wind up needing to be placed in foster homes. Can you take it from there and tell me what happens next on your end?
So what happens at our end is we try to place the children in homes that have the skills to meet the needs of the children. So we recruit foster parents from the community. We train them. We vet them to ensure that they can provide a, you know, safe and loving and nurturing environment for our kids. So we place the kids in the foster homes. We monitor them. We provide services. Simultaneously, we're working with the biological parents to help them overcome their issues. And our hope is always to reunite children with their families safely.
Mm-hmm. So do kids mostly end up with relatives or family friends
The first priority is to prevent the removal altogether. But if that's not possible, then we look for relatives and people that have a connection to the children. And we place with relatives and what we call kinship caregivers. And if that's not possible, then we place them in foster care and try to reunite safely. So foster care is a temporary arrangement while we work with the entire family.
So is child abuse and neglect the main reason that kids end up needing out-of-home care?
Yes, absolutely. Most of the abuse that we see and neglect that we see, also let me just add that neglect primarily is the driver that brings kids to our doors. And the neglect typically is because of parental substance abuse. And, you know, that's always coupled with something, coupled with mental health, coupled with domestic violence. And so this is the 1-2 punch, substance abuse and some sort of mental health or DV.
Mm-hmm. So substance abuse is the primary driver.
Absolutely. 80% of our families come to us because of substance abuse. A large number of children are removed because of parental substance abuse. And again, you know, when kids come back into the system, it's because of relapses in the family.
Mm-hmm. So, Jesus, I want to turn to you now. How long have you been a foster parent?
This will be my first year or ending the first year.
First year. So what made you decide to get involved in it?
Really just knowing the information, becoming educated about the actual need. And I've always had really an affinity for helping people. And it went from helping, you know, friends, people in the community who were drug addicts and homeless people into who eventually became friends into helping kids. And so that's really what happened, just education, learning how many kids are actually in foster care.
Who need help. Until they find a foster home to stay, where do they stay?
Well, we have some temporary shelter homes and temporary shelter facilities that can accommodate the kids. But bulk of the kids get immediately placed in a foster home.
Really? Do you have a shortage of foster parents?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I guess that's a perennial problem.
It's national, international. Yes.
Hey, Jesus, how many kids have you fostered? I mean, you've been in it for about a year. Four kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of moved in and then moved out?
No. Well, one I mentored from February until June, and then became his foster dad in June.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with me until September when he got into college, August, September.
Oh, great. So teenager.
Teenagers. And then took a break until about 2 months ago because that was pretty intense. And now I have a sibling set of three who are all teenagers.
All teenagers. And is it harder for teenagers to be placed?
Yes. It is, because typically people have a fear of teens. They feel like teenagers are more difficult to manage. They're set in their ways. But honestly, teenagers, they're just kids too. They're just abused kids. They just happen to be older.
I think the whole thing can be intimidating for a person wanting to get into foster parenting. And seeing someone who's older, bigger, maybe, you know, the problems may be bigger too. You don't know. And I think it could be – I can see how that could be intimidating for people. But what has been your experience with the teenagers that you've worked with, Jesus?
Well, I haven't worked with younger kids. I have two of my own biological kids. But when it comes to teenagers, I mean, they can look at you right in the eyes. They're standing toe-to-toe, you know? I think really what it comes down to, you know, what has been hard or the most amazing things too are just being able to reach them, get to them, knowing, okay, hey, I know you're really about to be an adult. And so whether they're in foster care for their whole lives, they can literally be in foster care their whole lives. And just jumping into my home as a teenager, knowing that they've had trauma for so long, there's still an opportunity to love them well enough to get them out of the shell, because they're in shells.
Well, they're kind of in survival mode.
Absolutely.
Right? So they come to you and they've got all these walls up, the shell, like mm-hmm. you mentioned. And it's just – they're just kind of there existing in your home.
Mm. Yeah. The thing is to build relationship. And so with time – that's time. Time, yeah. Consistent time, being the same day in and day out.
What's it like seeing a kid like this, you know? I mean, and they're still kids even if they're teenagers. They're kids. Mm-hmm. Seeing them, having gone through what they've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see them – something in their life hurting them, but watching them put up that guard to where they're not bothered – and they're tough enough to handle it.
They are bothered, you know. That's the thing. It's like I'm also a survivor of abuse, and so just knowing my own story, not only can I have compassion, but I can literally sympathize. Like knowing my own story, and so looking at them, knowing that they have the external shell, in conversation, eventually there's tears. And then when there's tears, you know they feel. And once they feel, then you know you can get to their heart. And that's really where the work is done, in the heart.
Well, having experienced – having known where they're – you can say, I know what you're going through because you do.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
You know, and then that may help. Although I know as a teenager you never believe anybody has
Absolutely.
Gone through anything you've gone through. You're the only human being who's experienced the thing yeah. that you've experienced, you know.
But it works. You know, because I'm careful, but there's a lot of – I do share, and it does work. Like for them to hear, okay, like I'm 33. You're 33. You didn't die, you know? Like life can be okay.
Like that whole campaign, it gets better.
It does.
Yeah.
It does get better if you work it.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest challenges that you faced being a foster parent?
I think the challenge of waking up and loving no matter what, because they don't believe it. They do not they don't believe in love yet at this point. And that's the most challenging part. Just like everything comes with a pushback. There's no – it's really not even wise, just I don't believe it. Everything is, I don't believe it. I don't want to. I will not. You can't make me.
I can see that, though, after being disappointed so many times earlier on in life,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that story kind of sound familiar to you, what parents go through?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this is our kids come to us with years of rejection by the people that should love them the most, their biological parents. You know, they're hurt at the hands of people that should care most about them. So obviously they do put up blocks. They don't want to hurt, so they mm-hmm. defend themselves the best way they know how, which is shut adults out. Mm-hmm. But all it takes really is just one loving, committed adult that will not disappoint them, that will remain committed no matter what, and can see past their behavior and their anger, because that's just their response to trauma. Because they can't come and say, oh, you know, I was hurt this way or that way. What they do is they show that in anger, resentment, rejection. So if we know that as adults, and that's the science of trauma, if we know that, we can approach every situation saying, okay, they're not rejecting me. This is their response to their mm-hmm. own trauma. And then that way, you know, doors open and walls come down and connections are made. But really, it just takes one loving, caring, committed adult to change a child's life. And this is what this movement is about. And this mm-hmm. is why we're out in the community making, you know, the community aware. And Jesus said something really important, which is if we don't know a problem exists, we can't go about solving it. And this is what April is so important for us, you know, child abuse prevention awareness. If the community knows what issues are out there and what issues are walking amongst us, then they can step up and say, I'm going to help solve this problem one way or another. Child mm-hmm. abuse is preventable. This is something absolutely that's man-made, and it can be undone by men.
Mm-hmm. And help to fix afterwards with?
Yeah, with love, with therapy, with support, with a community that doesn't turn away and says, you know, I can't look at this, it hurts too much, or I can't accept you because of what's happened to you. But embrace the kids, you know, give them an opportunity, because deep down, they're good. They really are. They just need an opportunity to just show that.
And is that part of the training that you give to people that are wanting to become involved in foster care, that what that response to trauma kind of reaction is, so that people yes. can be prepared for it?
Yes. A lot of our training has to do with trauma, how trauma presents itself, whether it's in behavior, whether it's in language, whether it's in physical aggression or rejection or whatever. And also we teach our foster parents that this isn't personal. This is not about you. You know, understand the trauma and embrace the child and show them that you are not going to reject them, because they bank on that. These kids know, if I break the door, if I smash a window, if I curse you out, you're going to kick me out. Mm-hmm. And they know that. They can deal with that. What they cannot deal with is a parent that says, you broke the window, it's all right, let's clean it up together and let's figure out what we can do next time to show our affection, our anger, our language in another way. And that child doesn't know how to deal with that. But see, they know rejection, so they always go to their comfort zone. And it's important for our foster parents, and this is what we teach. You cannot be the next rejection in their lives. They've already had too many of that. And so a lot of training, we teach a lot of behavioral techniques, you know, a lot of what are the signs and symptoms of abuse and neglect and how it manifests itself in kids. So, yeah, we absolutely prepare, but nothing is like hands-on, you know, like Jesus said.
Oh, no, Jesus is yeah. over here. He's nodding knowingly
yes.
about the broken window. Have you had a window broken?
No. A car stolen.
Oh, nice. What did you do when that happened? I mean, not naming names, but...
No, he disappeared for 3 days with my best friend's car, one of my friend's cars, and tried to reach out to him. And, you know, we told him, hey, we had to call the cops. You know, there's a detective. I mean, you have to do the hard things.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but I have to, you know. And ended up picking him up, driving him back from the East Coast, hit an alligator at 3 a.m. in my car with a stolen car behind me. You know, the cops come. I have to tell them the story, like, hey, this kid, you know, he's wanted. This is a stolen vehicle. As soon as you pull up the, you know, the plate. And he wasn't even in my care at the time. I was just mentoring him. He was in another foster home. I don't have his paperwork saying that he's my foster child. I mean, it was a scenario.
SMS.
Yeah. Forgive him. That's what I did. Forgive him. Bring him back. Say, hey, let's keep working.
Was he shocked? I mean,
absolutely. He was ready. He was ready to never come back.
He was ready to bolt. He just. Yeah,
absolutely. He didn't believe it, that I was going to go and pick him up, drive him back, eat with him. You know, I fed him when I picked him up. You know, we came. My friend forgave him. He came with me, drove him back in the car he stole with him, you know, which is – it's – that you can't make that stuff up.
I'm thinking about that car, that alligator alley drive conversation in the car.
Yeah, I mean, but – and like literally hitting an alligator, you know, like my radiator blew out. Like yeah. I had to leave my car on the side of the road.
So then you had to leave in the stolen car, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I had to go back awesome. In the stolen car. And so, you know – but it worked, you know, it worked. I still have a relationship with him. You know, he's not in my home. He's 18. He stole another car. He's in jail, you know. But he calls me. He writes me.
But there's someone to talk to.
There's relationship, you know. So it's like he got into foster care at 17. And so the idea was like there's no services. There was no anything. It was less than a year before he turned 18.
Yeah.
But he built enough relationship with me to know he can come back. He can continue to come back. And I told him like, hey, no matter what, like I will always be in your life. And he actually believes it to be writing me and calling me.
Well, that's kind of a big step. That's huge.
That's huge.
That's monumental.
Yeah.
Really. So I want to shift gears before we run out of time, though, because I want to ask about this manicure movement. I'm noticing a blue fingernail over here on the index finger. What is this about?
So this is a grassroots movement that just helps create awareness, and it's a conversation starter. So the hope is that someone will say, you know, Julie, why do you have one finger painted blue? And you say April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. And here are some facts that, you know, the reason for one fingernail is that 1 in 5 kids will be abused before they turn 18. These are national statistics. And 5 kids die a day as a result of abuse or neglect. And it just takes one caring adult to change a child's life. And so the movement is just to create awareness, again, make the community aware that we have a problem and everyone can play a role. Everyone. You can become a foster. You can become a mentor. You can adopt the child. You can donate and create, prevention programs. You can volunteer somewhere. There's so many opportunities. So it's a live walking movement to just generate a conversation and call to action for everyone.
So it indicates the one child in 5 that is touched by abuse or neglect.
Yes, and it takes one person to change a child's life, and that one person could be you.
So the index finger, fingernail painted blue.
Yes.
Has anybody seen your blue nail said anything? Yeah. What kind of conversation got started there?
Same conversations, how do you know? I'm a foster parent, you know? And so it starts the conversations of not only child abuse prevention, but, hey, you too can become a foster parent because I'm an advocate now.
Abused child repair and maintenance. Like the poor kids, just somebody helping them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's so awesome that you do that with these kids. So besides becoming a foster parent, what can people do to support your efforts here in the area? What kind of things can people get involved in?
Mm-hmm. So, we have a lot of events. People can volunteer. We have, we do several things a year that we call the community to come and support. We need mentors for our kids. We need mentors for our parents. Our young parents have not had good role models. So we have a family mentor program where if you can't take a kid home, okay, how about if you mentor a young mom or a young dad and just be a phone call and a support system to them?
Do you find a lot of that in this area specifically because a lot of people move here because it's beautiful weather but they don't have any family support system?
Yes, absolutely. And our families tend to be transient anyway. They run away from their problems. So they're here one day, they're in Hillsborough the next day and on the East Coast the other. Hmm. So but these are learned behaviors. When something bad happens, you run away from it. Our kids run away from our foster parents, and when they grow up and they're adults, they run from their problems. So, the reason we started the family mentor program is because a lot of folks were telling us, oh, I'm too old to foster. I can't raise kids. I'm done with that. So we're like, okay, well, you don't have to raise a kid, but how about if you mentor a young parent? Can you do that? Can you spend an hour a week calling someone and talking to them and celebrate their successes and be there if they have a issue that they want to talk through. We've had huge response. And this we do in partnership with United Way Volunteer Center. And it's a beautiful program.
And another thing I wanted to talk about before we run out of time is child abuse itself and reporting and noticing it. Mm-hmm. And Hayes, just like you mentioned earlier, that these kids are masterminds at acting unperturbed by anything. They're great actors and actresses. Everything's okay. Right. What are the things that people can look for to see if there is neglect or abuse that's happening and then report it? I know it's kind of not uniform because every kid's different and every situation is different. Mm-hmm. But what kind of things need to be reported?
So anytime you see a child, obviously, with the obvious things of bruises or marks or something of that nature, a change in the child's behavior. We have a lot of adults that have regular contact with our kids, teachers and church members and neighbors. If you see a marked behavior, the child becomes withdrawn and goes into himself or herself, If they're begging for food, if they're staying out late, if they're hiding from their parents, if they're withdrawn, those are all signs that something is not right. Something is different. Talk to the kid. See, you know, what's going on. It could just be they have a bad day, or it could be that they really are suffering at the hands of of an adult. And then report at 1-800-96-ABUSE and let the professional step in, determine if something is going on and how can we serve that family. A lot of times we can change the trajectory of these families if we get in there early enough to safeguard the children and teach the parents how to take care of their kids. Because at the core of it, parents love their kids and they want to do right. Sometimes it's a matter of they don't know how because they've never been taught.
And I think a lot of people don't really understand when they're in the middle of that situation or a parent that's in that economic stress and everything may not really realize what kind of things are out there that can help them.
Absolutely.
What kind of services are available.
Absolutely.
Jesus, I want to ask you, what would be a sign that you would probably notice in a kid that because of the background that you've had and your knowledge of what kids go through?
Head down.
You what?
Constantly not looking in the eyes with any adult, you know.
Avoiding eye contact.
Avoiding eye contact is huge. For sure, bruises in like not in the joints, like elbows or hands or knees, like that's normal. You start having bruises on your forearms. Sometimes you can see shoulders and stuff like that. That for sure. But when I talk to kids, I'm constantly looking at body language, how they carry themselves, if they're willing to look in the eyes, how they speak, what they don't say. There's a lot more that kids say through body language than their own words.
That is incredibly true. And the eyes down and not looking someone in the eyes is a...
Well, I mean, for it talks about their self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And children with abuse, they have low self-esteem. I'm not going to say – I mean across the board I would say that. But I'm not going to say every child that doesn't look at you in the eye
is having that problem.
Some of them have, autism or other
yeah, there's
other
a lot of things that could be. But
that would be for me is definitely
Or if changing from looking somebody in the eye, being active, and then suddenly all the time. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show, but I want to really thank my guest, Nadirae Salim. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Children's Network of Southwest Florida. Nadirae, thanks for coming in again. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
And Jesus Martinez, local foster parent. Jesus, it's so great to meet you.
Thank you.
And thanks for what you're doing. And I also want to thank my earlier guest, Dr. Terry Root, Fellow Emerita at the Woods Institute for the Environment at Stanford University, during our segment about plastics in the environment. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear all of our full episodes on our website, gulfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.